This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between, and they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino.
From Futuro Media and PRX, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, as the second largest voting cohort, Latinos and Latinas have real political power. But with changing demographics and redistricting efforts across the country, what does this mean for the midterms? In the 2020 presidential election, over 16 million Latinos and Latinas turned out to vote. And in key states like Arizona and Georgia, they played a role in sending President Joe Biden to the White House. But in other regions like South Texas or Florida, Donald Trump also made gains with Latinos and Latinas. So as we have said for years, for decades, Latinos and Latinas are clearly not a monolithic voting bloc. But they are having a political impact that cannot be taken for granted.
There's all these congressional seats that are up that are heavily Latino, that are marginal seats like 50-50 Democrat and Republican, yet none of them have a Latino campaign manager. None of them have a Latino-owned media firm or mail firm. And what that means is you probably lose some of that cultural nuance on how you really get that vote out compared to a white vote. Because if you run the same old election every single time and hope for different results, you're going to be shocked.
That's Democratic Party strategist Chuck Rocha speaking on the Young Turks show with David Schuster in June. Also, there have been concerted efforts by Republicans to restrict Black and Latino and Latina voters from accessing their political power. The courts have gutted the Voting Rights Act. There's been a rise in Spanish language disinformation, and conservative state legislatures have redrawn congressional districts to essentially cut out non-white voters.
The complaint we filed today alleges that Texas has violated Section 2 by creating redistricting plans that deny or abridge the rights of Latino and Black voters to vote on account of their race, color, or membership in a language minority group.
That's United States Attorney General Merrick Garland. Last December, he was announcing a Justice Department lawsuit to challenge redistricting efforts in Texas. And we are seeing the effects of these partisan maps. So in 2020, Latinos and Latinas made up only 1% of all local and federal elected officials, even though we represent 18% of the population. But now, in the 2022 midterms, more Latino and Latina candidates are running for office. And with the recent shift of Latino voters moving toward the Republican Party, outreach from Democrats often seems too little, too late. So, as we're nearing the elections, we're looking at how all these issues, from redistricting to voting access to voter outreach, how this is going to impact the Latino and Latina electorate. For the following roundtable discussion that continues our 2022 election cycle coverage at Latino USA, I'm joined by my In the Thick political podcast co-host, Julio Ricardo Varela. And we're joined by our guests, Sonia Diaz, founding director of the Latino Policy and Politics Institute at UCLA, and Jasmine Ulloa, who is a national politics reporter at the New York Times. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Latino USA.
So great to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
So we're going to dive into, a story that I've been talking about, for about three decades as a journalist, which is the complexity of Latino and Latina voters in this country, right? There's always this idea of wanting to take Latino and Latina voters and put us into a predictable block. And it's just not that way. So that's what we're going to dissect today. And political pundits and journalists and campaign officials have all tried to analyze this Latino vote. Now, what we've been saying for a long time is that it's not monolithic. We represent dozens of home countries with different kind of political experiences, different languages, dialects, traditions, food, customs, a lot of them. I mean, yes, we share a language, but for example, how do you compare a Mexican or Mexican-American voter in El Paso, Texas, to a Puerto Rican voter based in Pennsylvania's Lehigh Valley? By the way, one of the most important places for voters right now in Lehigh Valley in Pennsylvania, and differentiate that from Cuban voters in Miami, Mexicanos in LA or in Chicago. I mean, there's so much going on. Plus, there are Rust Belt cities like Milwaukee that are, you know, up and coming Latino and Latina cities. And so as a voting cohort, we do have power. We have extraordinary power as the second largest voting cohort in the United States. Doesn't mean that we are a voting bloc, but we are the second largest voting cohort. So, Sonia, I know it's a big question, but okay, give us the takeaway. What role would Latino voters play in the 2022 midterm elections?
Look, there's no denying the role that Latino voters are going to play, both in states like Texas, Arizona, Nevada, and California, but also in places that you mentioned, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. These are places where Latinos are going to be really important part of a multi-ethnic, multiracial coalition. And we saw that in Gwinnett County, Georgia. Mm-hmm. We saw it in Milwaukee, and we saw it in Philadelphia in 2020, where Latinos coalesced with Black voters and other voters of color to essentially send Joe Biden to the White House and really take control of the U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. Here's the kicker, though. There's a lot on the line, and there's a lot that is cause for some hesitation about the capacity of Latinos to essentially participate equally in politics.
Okay.
This is coming on the heels of an unacceptably flawed census for which reapportionment was determined. Arizona, long thought to pick up a congressional seat, did not. Texas picked up two. California lost one. And the key here is Latinos. And yet, with that growth and with those changes, those seats where Latinos were instrumental in really changing the balance of these House seats, those states had vindictive redistricting processes that penalized the data, though unacceptably flawed. And then come this year in 2022, the U.S. Census reveals that one out of 20 Latinos were undercounted.
Wow.
And so we have a democracy based on data that is not cogent and that overcounted non-Hispanic whites. So that's one. The second thing is voter suppression. Ultimately, all of this can be overcome with investment, engagement, and a field game. We've seen it before, the ways in which voters still turn out in COVID. 2020 was a historic election for everybody, for all voters. 2022 is a midterm. You're not going to see the 16 million Latino voters, but hopefully it will be at the level of 2018's midterms.
Okay, so Jasmine, we just heard that term, the field game, you know, the ground game. Mm. Anything can happen in terms of politics when you put that into the calculation, a strategic ground game, especially with Latino and Latina voters. But you're on the ground, you're doing this reporting, and that's so important. Your takeaway as a political reporter, kind of based on the ground, you know, talking with voters in key areas, what's your sense of the role that they're going to play in these 2022 upcoming midterms?
Yeah. So in 2020, I think what we really saw was this shattering of the assumption that National Democrats have held for a really long time, which is that demographics is destiny, that because Latinos lean Democrat overall, growth in the Latino population would automatically favor their party in elections. And so on the other side, what we've seen is Republicans are really seeing Latinos up for grabs. We're also seeing a change in the appeal. So George W. Bush stepped up his appeal to Latino voters, saying he wanted immigrants in the United States to feel welcome. He made this immigrant-friendly appeal that was thought to be the way forward in appealing to Latinos, right, mm-hmm. as a demographic.
We will always be proud to welcome people like Guadalupe Danahan as fellow Americans. Our new immigrants are just what they've always been, people willing to risk everything for the dream of freedom. And America remains what she has always been, the great hope on the horizon, an open door to the future, a blessed and promised land. We honor the heritage of all who come here, no matter where they come from, because we trust in our country's genius for making us all Americans.
But what we're seeing now, especially after the Trump years and what we're seeing in the 2022 midterms, is that these anti-immigrant xenophobic appeals, they're using these appeals to draw in voters, and it's drawing in Latino voters in very much the same way that it is drawing white, rural, working class voters. I guess what 2020 also showed was, and what we're seeing now in studies and polls, is that Latinos are ideologically diverse and they are open to persuasion.
Yeah.
So Republicans have a lot of things working for them this year. I mean, they have the economy, they have Biden's sagging inflation measures, and they're actually putting a lot of investment out there. They're opening community centers to draw in Latino voters in places where there weren't.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that, you know, we have this major abortion ruling. Mm-hmm. We have these mass shootings that are happening every other week now. And I'm hearing anger from voters, and especially young voters that I haven't heard in a long time. And voters who have been following the news but haven't been as active in elections or volunteering. And so I think that that's changing. That could factor in November.
Right. And I think that's the big question, like in 2020, about this sort of discovery, right? That, what did you say? Demographics is not destiny, right? This notion of Democrats coming to realization that just because the country's changing it, these votes are not guaranteed and you got to do the work. So for example, when we look at 2020, the analysis of Latino and Latino voters in Zapata County, for example, how they voted for Trump, making him the first Republican to win there in over 100 years. And I believe there was a piece by Jack Herrera, who wrote about this in Politico, how Trump gained ground by speaking to people as Tejanos and addressing specific concerns like the oil and gas industry or gun rights, instead of just seeing them as a block, right, of Latino and Latino voters.
In fact, I just signed an executive action to protect American health care benefits for all American citizens. Among those hardest hit by illegal immigration are millions of legal immigrants right here in Texas, including millions of patriotic, hardworking Mexican-Americans who play by the rules, pay their taxes, follow our laws, and strengthen our communities.
And then there's the case of Republican Mayra Flores, right, who won a congressional seat during a special election in South Texas this past June, making her the first Republican to win there in decades. And we're already seeing how this race is heating up, right? Between Flores and her opponent, Democrat Representative Vicente Gonzalez. So just in July, there was this Texas blogger who was paid for advertising services by Gonzalez's campaign, writing pieces attacking Flores. And he called her Miss Frijoles and other racist and sexist slurs. And Gonzalez did condemn the language, but I mean, this is not the messaging Democrats need to be associated with, especially in this race that's happening in a majority Latino and Latina district. And then there was this great piece by your colleague, Jasmine, at the New York Times that came out in July as well. And that was by Jennifer Medina, who's a friend, and how there are examples of more Latinas running for office on more of a far right platform. And that's becoming more common. So there are lots of layers here. And Democrats seem to be missing that, right?
Well, and that's the question, is like, it seems like this is benefiting Republicans in the short term, but there are also Republican strategists that are worried about the long term. whether this is going to have this long-term appeal. And then on the Democratic side, what you're not really seeing is a cohesive, strong message on immigration, on guns, on the economy, on healthcare. Mm-hmm. And so that's the other thing that we've been analyzing, or that I've been looking at a lot as well, is looking at the ads. Mm. The ads on immigration, the ads on guns, they paint this very dark picture of America, right? This negative mm-hmm. picture of America, that the American dream is slipping away from people, that the borders are open and immigrants are coming in, and they're the ones that are going to stop it. They're going to stop Joe Biden, and they're going to stop radical Democrats. That's a much simpler message to make, especially in times of crisis.
Right.
That has a lot of appeal, and you're not seeing a counter on the Democratic side.
Sonia, you talk about complexity of identity, being part of a multi-ethnic, multi-generational demographic. How do you put this all together in the analysis that you've been doing?
Yeah. Well, I think that there's two things at play right now. One is the willful neglect by both parties, but one party in particular that consistently takes Latino voters for granted, despite the path forward in terms of expanding the electorate.
And what party would that be?
That would be the Democrats.
Okay.
You know, the idea that South Texas went Republican for the 34th House seat in the first time in over a century, despite the temporal sense of that seat, is still an issue, because it allows this idea of winning to really shape the narrative of what 2022 is going to look like. So that's one. There's just willful neglect. The second thing is misinformation and disinformation. And this is well documented. Our own government filed a report around disinformation around Black voters in 2016. Mm-hmm. In 2020, we're seeing it with COVID-19. We're also now seeing it with abortion. There are these theories out there that hit, and they hit Latinos because we're digital first. We're on our phones, or we're watching Hulu or Netflix or YouTube, and there's going to be ads. And those ads are just going to bombard us. And guess who's paying for the ads? Not the Democrats or the Democratic candidates. So I'll give you an example of like what a solution is. In 2020, we saw conservative vested interest filed a petition with the state of California to recall Governor Gavin Newsom. Mm-hmm. And the origins in terms of that were backlash to immigrants, frustration over criminal justice reform, and frustration over homelessness, as though it was a public safety issue. Now, it ended up on the ballot, and the Democrats weren't prepared. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, just really took a lot of voters for granted, because things were looking good. The vaccines were out. California had a surplus. Who knew this was a cause for alarm? Who understood the through line between Prop 187 in California in the 1990s to the Trump administration to this gubernatorial recall were trusted messengers and immigrant rights leaders. And they mobilized during a global pandemic to knock doors and to message something that was different from both sides. One side was xenophobic. The other side had the wrong message, which was this is a Republican grasp for power. Trusted messengers said, this is about the future of California. This is about science and data and getting through the COVID-19 pandemic. This is about economic opportunity and jobs. And ultimately, research out of UCLA's LPPI found that 3-1 Latino voters in the state of California rejected the recall. And so we just have these bad takes, and we have a willful neglect.
Coming up on Latino USA, we take a deeper look into some of the key races we're following this midterm cycle and how Latino and Latina voters can make an impact. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you.
Hey, we're back. Let's get back to the conversation about the political power of Latino and Latina voters in the upcoming midterms. I'm joined by my In the Thick co-host, Julio Ricardo Varela, Sonia Diaz of UCLA's Latino Policy and Politics Institute, and Jasmine Ulloa from the New York Times.
So we also know while Latinos and Latinas are underrepresented in public office, this election cycle, we're actually seeing more candidates who are Latino or Latina running for office.
Yeah.
There are a lot of key races in 2022, and sometimes that can feel a little bit overwhelming, right? And people tune out about this. But we know that control of the House and the Senate are at stake for the Democrats. So, Jasmine, you recently wrote a piece about a competitive House race in Colorado with a conservative state senator going up against Yadira Caraveo, who's a Democratic state representative. And Jasmine, I'm wondering, can you break this down for us again, this example of a race and what it should be a harbinger of and what we should be keeping an eye on in terms of other midterm races?
Yeah, so Colorado's 8th District, which covers the north suburbs of Denver, it's a really fast and growing area. It includes rural voters, you know, rural Latino voters.
Wow.
It includes suburbs, exurbs. It's just a really geographically and demographically, it's diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And so Yadira Caraveo is vying to be the first Latina from Colorado to serve in Congress. We've seen this all over the country, right? The growths in many cities and states are being driven by the Latino population. But
yeah,
Colorado is like a perfect example of where that representation of Latinos hasn't been there. I think it's been 2 Latino congressmen in the last 25 years.
Hmm.
So this is a really interesting district because there's no incumbency there. It's an open seat. It's a new seat. So there's just, people have no idea where the Latino population is going to go.
Right.
And so Yadira is really selling her personal story as the daughter of Mexican immigrants, this embodiment of what you can do in the United States in an inclusive United States. On the other side, Barbara Kirkmeyer is playing on the economy. She's really leaning on the troubles in the economy to make the case, I'm here to make sure that you can work hard and strive.
I mean, the fact that Yadira is running in Colorado, that she could be the first, those would be places where you're saying, well, Caraveo is actually, you know, trying to go for this. She's jumping in. She's not essentially sitting back and just saying, well, you know, there's nothing to be done.
Exactly. Yeah. This is definitely one of those seats. The other seats that, of course, I'm watching, I mean, South Texas, like we've already mentioned, Flores, who won the special election seat, Monica de la Cruz, and Cassie Garcia in the Valley. You know, they call them the far-right Latinas. But I think what's really interesting about Monica de la Cruz's competitor on the Democratic side, Michelle Vallejo.
Yeah.
Her ad introducing herself to voters has her walking through a pulga. You know, she talks about how she grew up with pulgueros.
For people who don't know what that is, flea markets.
It's like a swap meet kind of.
Yeah.
It was a very effective ad. Like, you don't often see a political candidate saying, hey, like in this pulga, this is kind of where I grew up shopping.
Yeah, she now runs it. She's also making that American dream appeal, touting her working class credentials. But instead of using it to close the door behind herself, right, behind others, she's using it to push these progressive policies, such as raising the minimum wage or expanding Medicare for all. So that's going to be a really interesting race because you can really see the contrast on the other side of how they're, you know, touting the working class credentials that appeal to the economy, which is what I keep hearing from Latinos they want to hear most about.
Sonia, what are some of the races that you're focusing on and that are either giving you hope or are making you infinitely more frustrated about the future and Latino and Latina voters?
Well, I think that this is a really important way to think about both an opportunity and then also, unfortunately, something that our unsophisticated democracy is going to have trouble overcoming, which is candidacy.
Mm-hmm.
Neither party is really betting on growing a Latino bench. We see that cycle after cycle. I was anticipating that come 2022, when there's open gubernatorial contests, that the Democratic Party would really start championing Latina or Latino candidates. And in fact, in a place like Arizona, which was ripe, given the ways in which those voters have really safeguarded democracy, the party has fallen short.
Yeah.
And so the main point here is that Latinas are great crossover candidates. Mm. So it's smart.
Exactly, yeah.
For those Republican strategists that are really helping three conservative right-wing Latina candidates mm-hmm. in South Texas to test the boundaries of that.
Yeah.
What I will say in terms of the races is Nelly Gorbea, who really was a statewide constitutional officer, Secretary of State in Rhode Island, is now running for governor, and she's the first person in New England that's Latina. Again, Sonia Chang Diaz was in the running for Massachusetts governor, but has since withdrawn. Her name will still be on the ballot.
Right.
Similarly, one of the things that we need to see is to what extent are Democrats not only expanding the electorate, but maintaining holds that require continued investment. And Nevada is a place where the Democratic Party needs to continue to invest heavily. On the ballot is Senator Catherine Cortez Masto, the first Latina U.S. senator in the history of this country up for re-election. How much is the party going to support her so she comes out successful with wide margins and then also is going to be an important leader nationally in the run-up to the 2024 elections? The other thing in my home state of California, though Alex Padilla was appointed by Governor Newsom during the June primaries, voters overwhelmingly elected him to a full 6-year term. He had to run to fulfill and serve Vice President Kamala Harris's term, and then for his new 6-year, he's there. Now the party needs to elevate his leadership to start building the pipeline and turning out Latino voters in other places like the Midwest and even the South. Mm. When we think about some of these candidates, there's also the messaging and the issues. So I liked what Jasmine was saying around the nuance, right? Whether it's the economy or jobs. We know the 2016 presidential election was about xenophobia. Plain and simple. In 2020, Trump and his strategists transitioned to really talk about the economy. Now, as we look towards 2024, we already see some Democratic candidates, namely white candidates from the West Coast, starting to dip their toes into some of the battleground states. So Governor Newsom started running ads in Florida. Why? Well, his whole career has been around gun reform and LGBT rights. And those are on the table with the Supreme Court. And so what we need to see is out-of-pocket ideas that are starting to message on the issues in ways that are culturally relevant. And frankly, we just refuse to integrate non-white voices into our policymaking and decision-making tables.
I mean, you have to do mass marketing. Without consumers that are Black or Latino or Latina, you have no future. But again, it's just fascinating to see how the political parties are, at least the Democrats, are kind of experiencing still a kind of lethargy on this.
This is the same conversation that I've been having.
Just like, wake up.
But it's interesting because I think, Sonia, you brought it up. Another part of this that we've been talking about in terms of trying to get this sort of holy grail of political power for our community, which, you know, is this quest that is probably going to take several years, maybe even decades, is this notion of voter suppression tactics. And I know we focused on misinformation and disinformation previously, but talking about voter suppression and gerrymandering, especially in Republican-leaning legislatures, where there are still lies about voter fraud and the election, the 2020 election being stolen, and how those lies have led to actual laws being passed that restrict access to voting in key states. So one example is that the Justice Department is suing Arizona over a new state law that requires proof of citizenship to vote in a presidential election. Hmm. And also Republicans are redrawing district maps in a way that gives them more of an advantage and takes away political power from Black and Latino voters. Example of this is in Texas last year, state lawmakers voted on a map that added no new congressional districts in areas where Black and Latino voters make up the majority. Even though Sonia was talking about these districts being added in Texas, they weren't reflective of the demographics of Texas. And those demographics, Black and Latinos, are fueling the state's population growth. Then we get messaging from the president of the United States, President Biden, who just says, just go out and vote.
If you want to change the circumstances for women and even little girls in this country, please go out and vote.
Nothing guaranteed about our way of life. We have to fight for it, defend it, and earn it by voting.
Vote, 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 vote.
So, Jasmine, in your reporting, in what people are saying about exercising their political power, when there are clear examples of gerrymandering or just laws against claims of voter fraud, what are people telling you in this context of, you know, voter suppression?
I think that the temperature has been building on this issue for the last year. I mean, it's a long, drawn out battle. It's been places like Texas where, you know, you have MALDEF and LULAC and all these other Latino advocacy organizations that have long been fighting for equal access to the ballot for many years. It's kind of more of the same for them, but ratcheted up, if that makes sense.
Right.
And so in talking to veterans of voting rights battles, there's been this realization in the power of the state and how they've been too focused on the federal level and on the Supreme Court. Hmm. With the loss of Roe, what I'm hearing from people who have been fighting these battles for a really long time is just the need to reinvest at the state level.
You're right. Obviously, Texas has a history and, you know, that's where you're from. And talking about sort of this effort from conservatives, this is a long-term plan that's starting to come to fruition. Jasmine, share a little more about that.
Yeah. So in talking to, for example, Karthik Ramakrishnan, you know, he's a public policy professor at the University of California, mm-hmm. and talks a lot about how this state push on the part of conservatives has been very intentional, starting from the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965, that since then, conservatives have really realized the power of the state and the power of that grassroots advocacy. This extremely conservative Supreme Court, the control of state legislatures, this gerrymandering,
right.
has really been a 50-year effort. And so for progressives who have been so focused on the federal level, on trying to pass legislation and failing, there hasn't been comprehensive immigration reform. There hasn't been these sweeping gun measures that they've been pushing for. What he's predicting, what others are predicting, is this shifting that's going to need to happen to do that same kind of level of advocacy and grassroots organizing from the bottom up.
Yeah.
But that is going to take years is what, you know, he said.
The people power that when Maria cites Dolores Huerta, you know, that it has to come from the grassroots up, but it takes a long time. Sonia, is voting enough? And if not, what else should people be focusing on?
There's been a concerted effort after President Barack Obama was elected to start disentangling access to the ballot box. And this happened in all forms of our republic. There was a Republican-led, focused effort at the legislative level to start passing restrictive voting bills that predates Trump. There was the Supreme Court ruling in 2013 in Shelby County that essentially gutted Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, the preclearance requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Those litigation and legal cases continue to be well-funded by moneyed interests to take away Section 2, which is really around the opportunity to have equal political voice.
Mm-hmm.
This is not new. Voting has been a place where, because of demographics in this country, has dictated the policy preferences of a mature, aging, and dwindling white electorate for a nation that is predominantly fueled by the growth of Asian Americans and Latinos. So this is purposeful. What we're seeing right now, though, that one still needs to vote, but the strategy needs to be bigger. You've got to hook voters in. You've got to make them enthusiastic about a platform or a product, but you also have to make sure that they're going to be able to cast a ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I had money, and I was a white strategist in the Beltway that election after election, major parties put on retainer, I would say we still need to register voters and we need to do education because the modality of voting has changed, continues to be transformed. In states like California that are expanding the electorate where everybody gets a mail-in ballot at home, well, where do you drop it off? To states that are changing because they don't want Black and brown voters to vote, like Arizona, and cutting the names off of early voting.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot here, but it's really simple. Spend money to get eligible voters to transition from eligibility to likely voters. And you will then see the ways in which our policy, our politics, our democracy changes.
Mm.
But ultimately, this is all purposeful. And on one side, there's willful neglect. And on the other side, there's a cohesive strategy that has been decades in the making.
Thank you all for being on Latino USA with me. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This episode was produced by Harsha Nahata and edited by Julio Ricardo Varela. It was mixed by J.J. Carubin. The Latino USA team includes Andrea Lopez Cruzado, Marta Martinez, Daisy Contreras, Mike Sargent, Julieta Martinelli, Victoria Estrada, Patricia Zulbarán, Alejandra Salazar, Reinaldo Leaños Jr., and Julia Rocha, with help from Raúl Pérez. Our editorial director is Fernanda Santos. Special thanks to the rest of the In the Thick team as well, Noor Saudi, Lisa Salinas, and Sarah Hershander. And remember to subscribe to In the Thick wherever you get your podcasts. Our director of engineering is Stephanie LeBeau. Our senior engineer is Julia Caruso. Our associate engineer is Gabriela Baez. Our marketing manager is Luis Luna. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Remember, join us for the next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media and no te vayas. Ciao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by California Endowment, building a strong state by improving the health of all Californians, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative.
I'm trying to think of, like, what do I say after no te vayas, but I haven't come up with the right catchphrase, but I love
Benito,
it.
Benito, you came to visit, Benito? Hi.
Hey, Benito.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Odoo. Modern management made simple.